Welcome to the Pursuit of Manliness podcast, where we are vigorously equipping men to pursue biblical manliness. On today's show, I get the opportunity to talk with Mike Gillette. Mike Gillette's life story reads like an action-adventure novel, a life which includes time spent as an Army paratrooper, SWAT commander, government counter-terrorism expert, bodyguard to Fortune 50 executives, and a record-breaking performance coach whose achievements have been documented by Guinness World Records and Ripley's Believe It or Not. Through speaking, workshops, and one-on-one coaching, Mike Gillette teaches proprietary methods for breakthrough improvements in mental performance. On today's show, Mike and I talk about the importance of mental toughness and how having a strong mind can lead to a strong body. Now it's time for our show. Young boy grew tall and he finally grew up. All right, let's welcome Mike Gillette to the show. Mike, thank you for joining the Pursuit of Manliness podcast.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Jared.
Hey, Mike, when I look at your bio, and I said a little bit of it in the beginning, I just have to ask this question. It's just, is there one or two things in your life that you look back on and say, when your head hits the pillow, like, I can't believe I got to do that? Like, that is a almost like an out-of-body experience. It was so cool, this moment or this role I got to play.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to pick just one or two. Honestly, I've been blessed with a lot of really unique opportunities over the years, but there are a couple, and one of which is I think probably tied to feelings of family and feelings about my wife, and it goes back to when I was on active duty in the Army. It was in the 82nd Airborne Division, and being in the Army was sort of the pendulum swing to the other side of life, whereas the previous side of life had been very negative, full of very self-defeating decisions, bad choices, and just, you know, horrible attitudes and so forth. And I took that, all of that early negativity in my life, about as far as I could without actually dying, not for lack of trying. That led to my entrance into the military. So it wasn't just that I was in the military, you know, as a young, impressionable guy, and golly, what a great environment that was, discipline and men to follow. There was all of that. But it was it felt bigger than that. I mean, that's really where my early spiritual life sort of flourished. So when I was doing it, it felt as though it meant something, and I felt, you know, I mean, certainly it meant something to me, you know, as an individual, because I was growing a lot of different ways as a result of being in that setting. But it also felt big to me because I really felt it was kind of Chariots of Fire like, which I had seen in those days because it was in theaters, 1982. And, you know, there's the line, you know, when I run, I feel God's pleasure.
Sure, well, sure.
When I jumped out of airplanes and lived in the woods and ran around and did push-ups and shot my M16, in my mind, I felt God's pleasure. You know, as corny as that may sound, that's how I was living it. And it just felt good and it felt right, you know, and living a life of service felt right. And the last thing I did while I was on active duty, or I should say last jump I made, my wife happened to be there. It was an administrative jump rather than a training jump, so civilians could come onto the compound and watch this take place. And I'm not going to lie, I like jumping out of airplanes in front of my wife because I'm thinking that she's thinking I'm kind of cool when I do that. I was a young guy. So as much as I liked to do it, I also had the added benefit of, you know, doing it in front of the missus. So and she was also holding our baby, who was maybe 5 months old at the time. And there was just some resonance about that. Obviously, our daughter Jenny wasn't going to remember that moment, but I would always remember that she had been there. So feeling strong, feeling capable, feeling close to God, jumping out of his sky onto his earth, you know, all is right with the world. Then I leave active duty for an ROTC scholarship. I'm at the University of Arizona. I'm tracking through all of that. And I'm at the end of my first semester, I'm involved in this climbing accident. This climbing accident breaks my back, smashes my ankles. I'm in a wheelchair. I'm booted from the military for medical reasons with no possible hope of ever getting back. And this is my first answer to part A of your question. I realize that. I'll be briefer on the subsequent answer, but there's a lot of context necessary sure. here. So there I am. I'm all smashed up. In addition to feeling despondent about that and being in pain all the time because I was in pain for years. It was horrible. But I had also allowed myself to become distant from God at that time. When we moved from a military town to a college town and we didn't find a church that was exactly like the church that was on Fort Bragg, which is a pretty manly place, and even the churches are pretty tough, full of tough guys who've done tough things, and that was a powerful period for me. You know, I never really equated Christianity with, you know, wearing a cardigan and drinking, you know, coffee out of a styrofoam cup, and having a donut after a church service. My frame of reference was, you know, a church full of men who did stuff and who had seen stuff. And I wasn't even really in that category. I was one of the young ones who was kind of learning at the feet of these older ones who had done stuff. And it was glorious. So now I'm smashed up. There's no chance I can do what I kind of thought God wanted me to do. And I'm feeling cut off from God. I'm not really understanding in my youth and my limited coping skills, my limited perspective, how any of this made sense. And somehow, either because I'm super motivated and an amazing human being, or I just couldn't fathom doing anything other than trying to be some kind of physical person, some type of person who lived a life of service, I was able to, against the advice and directives of a number of medical professionals, after a period of four and a half years, I clawed my way back to the point where I was a physical guy again. And I entered the field of law enforcement, and all of that was great. And a few years go by, and I stumble across this military unit. It was called 194th Infantry Detachment Long Range Surveillance (parentheses airborne). You know, if it's a government thing, they have to find the longest possible way to describe it. But it was that (parentheses airborne) that was like, what? It was a National Guard unit, but it was small. It was made up of guys who had been in the 82nd or the Ranger Battalion or Special Forces. So I win an opportunity to gain audience with the command staff of this little unit. I have to get screened. I made it through the physical screening, and I get my military physical, and I'm on my way to sign in proper to this unit, and stamped on my military physical. 11 years after my last jump was this expression, airborne qualified. Literally almost started crying when I saw that.
Wow.
So now I'm getting to the conclusion of part A of question one, which is the thing that I really never thought I would get to do was jump out of an airplane again, military style. I really needed to get back on that horse. And in 1996, in March of 96, my wife and my kids, my oldest was now 11. This is one she would remember. Were all physically present when I made my first jump 11 and a half years after my last one. Oh, a wow. jump that, you know, my orthopedic surgeon, who had been a former Army orthopedic surgeon, said would never happen, because he told me the day I was smashed up, I would walk again, and I should be happy about that, but I would never run again. I would never jump out of any more airplanes. Wow. So that was the one thing that I got to do that I never thought I would get to do. And the fact that, A, I got to do it, and B, I got to do it with my family there, it really was an important experience. Now, I'll share one more thing, and this one will be less rambly, but it will be fairly detailed, because this is something I actually wrote about. And this goes back a couple of years. And this is a piece that I wrote about that. Here it is. This is something from my assembly of blogs at MikeGillette.com. Like most men, I've had my share of mentors, men who spoke directly into my life and helped shape the person I've become. And in addition to mentors, I've had some myths in my life as well. I am defining myth as someone who may or may not be real, but their story or persona represents something that you wish to emulate. When I was young, I had a list of mythical men who embodied various characteristics I valued. Some were historical figures, and a couple of them were movie stars. In 1981, after a couple of self-destructive years, I went through some significant changes in terms of how I wanted to live my life. Chief among them was deciding that I actually wanted to live my life. And it was shortly after that particular realization when I was introduced to two film stars, Chuck Norris and Sylvester Stallone. At the time, I was largely unfamiliar with the martial arts, and I was amazed by Norris because of what he could do physically. And I could also tell that although Chuck was not a big guy, he could use his skills to make a very big statement. And what I liked about Stallone was the characters I saw him play, and the fact that he was, in those days, so physically impressive. And as a guy who had spent 18 years being scrawny and weak, that really resonated with me. The following year, I saw Stallone in First Blood, the story of John Rambo, a Vietnam-era Special Forces soldier, more commonly known as Green Berets, who had run afoul of a small-town police force and used his extensive repertoire of unconventional warfare skills to fight back. What intrigued me about the character of John Rambo was his skill set. Rambo seemed to be able to do so many amazing things. There was a sense of complete mastery in the physically impressive Rambo character. And since I had just arrived at Fort Bragg as a newly minted paratrooper, the same Fort Bragg which is home to the Army Special Forces, I felt all the more connected to this ideal of being strong, quiet, and exceptionally skilled. But unexpected circumstances intervened, and by the end of 1984, a climbing accident put me into a wheelchair and out of the Army. The next few years were a numbing blur of pain and frustration as I attempted to regain my physical self. And during those years, I would go see films like Rambo 2 and Rocky 4. It seemed that as I continued to waste away physically, falling further away from the life I once felt destined to lead, Stallone just kept on getting bigger and stronger as he saved the world again and again. Now, fast forward a few years later, and I had somehow managed to reclaim my physical self and resume a life of service. I still had my mentors, but as I got older, the myths became less important. Perhaps it was because as I accomplished more and more, I realized that the Hollywood versions of super soldiers and RoboCops weren't exactly accurate. Because most real action guys tend to be average-sized, non-supermen who are far stronger on the inside than their visible physiques would ever indicate. Postscript. In March of 2011, I had what I can only describe as a full-circle experience. I was living in Las Vegas and working as a bodyguard, and for several days I was assigned to protect Sylvester Stallone while he and his wife Jennifer were in town. During these assignments, there is always a lot of work to do and not much time for things like self-reflection. But once I had finished and the Stallones were safely wheels up on their way back home, it occurred to me just how unique this opportunity had been. Once upon a time, when I was basically just a kid, I had looked up at a movie screen. And I watched a mythical version of someone who I aspired to be like. So I set about becoming that person. It took a long time for me to do that. So long, in fact, that I never really sensed the progress I was making at the time. I just kept working away, trying to become that person. A person who had a particular collection of experiences, values, and skills. So as I drove home from the airport looking forward to some much-needed sleep, it hit me. I had, in fact, actually become that guy. So much so that I had been placed in the unusual position of safeguarding a man who had once loomed larger than life in my own consciousness, a myth. As this fact sunk in, I caught myself starting to smile. It was a good moment.
So, Mike, when I look at your stuff and I look at, you know, I know you a little bit here, mental toughness is big to you. And you have a blog post called In Search of a Strong Mind where you talk about what's missing in people when it comes to mental toughness. Can you unpack what you see that missing link is and how you use that to motivate the people that you come into contact with and work with?
Sometime within the past week, I came across my very first blog post. And it was posted online 10 years ago. So this summer, 10 years ago, was the first time I posted a blog post. And my blog at the time was called Man Up, which was less of a cliche phrase back then. But it was the post was all about mental toughness. And I realized that I'm either in a rut or perhaps I'm simply consistent with my messaging. But I keep coming back to this because I think it's something that is so very important. There's no one more insufferable, I'm told, than somebody who is a former cigarette smoker. They will be the most obnoxious, adamant advocate to get other people to stop smoking. And in a way, I sort of identify with that. I had such a lack of discipline, such a lack of mental toughness, a lack of anything resembling strength and focus and character in my early life, that once I saw it and I started moving towards it, I knew that was the stuff. That was the secret sauce. Now, that's not to overlook the thing that made it possible for me to move towards that, which was my faith. I had no positive inclinations prior to that. So, I mean, until I got myself, squared away with Jesus, I had no inclination to do anything that was productive. But once I had that, then it was kind of like there was a spotlight on everything that I needed. And it all flowed down from being strong on the inside, making strong choices, however you might choose to define it. For me, it's I write about it, I talk about it. When I work with athletes, which constitutes the majority of the people that I am professionally engaging with, that is, even if I'm doing like actual physical training, the mental training just it flows into it. So, if somebody goes, "Mike Gillette, what's that?" and they search online, and some of those search results are going to be links to YouTube, and you click on those, and you're going to see somebody doing some stuff that's looks crazy, it's dangerous, high propensity for injury, all of the above. Why does somebody do that? Is he just crazy? And maybe not, but even if I am, that shouldn't get in the way of the reason that I'm doing it. I mean, my own reason for doing this is because it's a litmus test. I mean, it's great to talk about how important something is. I mean, you can read a book about it, but you won't own it until you do it. You won't have it until you're making it happen.
Why do you think there's such a gap between the knowing and the doing? Why is there such a bridge there?
Man, I wish I had a handle on that beyond knowing that there is a gap. And I have some other thing that I wrote, and if you'll sure. indulge and share it, it's not nearly as long as the other one. And when I wrote this, I called it Strength versus Weakness. And ironically, I wrote it when that movie came out, I guess it was like a couple years ago, that 50 Shades of Inappropriate or sure. whatever that
movie I think is. It was Gray. I think it was Gray.
Yeah. Well, there is, yeah. Which, and even the title is kind of clever. It's kind of a cultural commentary, 50 Shades of Gray. And there's not a lot of gray that's spoken about positively in the Bible.
Right.
So, hence the title Strength versus Weakness. So this is kind of why is there the gap? I don't know why there is the gap, but I understand the gap. I used to live the gap once upon a time. I probably still live that gap more than I realize. And certainly anytime I catch myself taking the easy way out or doing something half-heartedly or without complete conviction, that's when I disappoint myself the most. If I've said something and then I catch myself not living that something, it drives me crazy. I don't think that's an accident. So here is me sort of speaking to strength versus weakness, that the difference between just knowing and actually doing it. There are things we know we should do and things we know we shouldn't. There are times we want to do the things we shouldn't and times we don't want to do the things that we should. It is this quizzical relationship between what we want to do and what we should or should not do that illuminates the presence or absence of strength in our lives. Although strength may seem like something solid and permanent, it is often a fleeting thing. We are only as strong as our last choice, and if that last strong choice is a distant memory, then so too is our strength. When you look at someone who you consider to be strong, you are actually looking at a paradox. You might see this person who appears to embody physical power or a collection of achievements and presume that this is all because they possess the quality we call strength. But strength is not an internal quality or external attribute. It is instead a byproduct of accumulation. It is only through the accumulation of choices, strong choices, that a person reveals the presence of strength in their own life. So where's the paradox? The paradox is in our own understanding of the strong people in our midst. Although a strong person may seem impervious to the forces of weakness all around them, in actuality they are not. Only a person who prioritizes making strong choices will realize just how many weak choices surround them all the time. Whenever you are faced with the prospect of making a strong choice, you are likewise forced to consider the contrasting weak alternative. And the temptation to make weak choices is just as great for a strong person as it is for anyone else. And herein lies the less obvious and more humbling aspect of the pursuit of strength. For people who follow the path of least resistance and make choices based upon expedience or comfort, no such self-examination is necessary, because weak choices are easy. They don't require any struggle. And in many cases, weak choices are the more attractive choice to make. Strength, like weakness, is cumulative. It is both a habit and an end state. The pursuit of strength, in all its forms, becomes easier the more it is practiced. But it never becomes so easy that it can completely displace weakness. This is why, ultimately, strength itself is a struggle to attain and a struggle to keep. Because of this, strength has enormous value, a value that cannot be overestimated and should never be taken for granted. Choose strength for yourself, then keep choosing it. Yes, you will struggle, but this is a good thing. That's when you'll know you have it, because no one struggles more than a seeker of strength.
That's good. That's good. Speaking of seeking things, with that in mind, on your website, Mike, you have the 5 ways to become tough as nails. When someone clicks on that, downloads, I know they have to give an email and stuff. What do you hope they gain from that? What do you hope they find in there?
First off, the 5 ways to become tough as nails, I would love to take credit for that. I didn't come up with it. So, in full disclosure, that's something that I... this is all a product that I created with a company who I've done a few products with, and they specialize in physical training, and the product that gets promoted with that special report is something called The Psychology of Strength, which was their first mental training product, and it was cool to do it with them. They're a Christian-owned business, and they're very upfront about that. They're really awesome. What do I hope that people get from that? It's... the same thing that I hope that they get when I post, any number of the voluminous examples of me basically trying to harass the multitudes into doing what will ultimately make their lives better, will make them enjoy life more. The strange thing, so much of... I think of some of the universal truths of life are that they're counterintuitive. For example, once upon a time, we started wrapping kids in knee pads and elbow pads and bike helmets, and we'd do it with bubble wrap too if we could do it without suffocating the kid, because what we want to do is we want to try to keep kids from hurting themselves. And that mentality has led to some school districts issuing rules where you can't run on the playground.
Wow.
Okay. So you can kind of see there was something sweet and kind at the front end of all of that, but sometimes the end result is the opposite. How many I mean, you're a professional when it comes to referencing the Bible, so I'm not going to embarrass myself in front of you. But there are no points that I can recall in the Bible where it says, you know, hey, everybody, you know, be quiet, settle down, aspire to wussiness, and don't challenge yourself. I mean, it's the opposite of that.
Right.
You know, it's right. There isn't anything that you are promoting with your podcasts and your blogs and just you're communicating what I'm communicating. You're doing it in a more, you know, from a more specifically spiritual perspective. When I do it, I hope that the people who believe like I believe are hearing it and feeling it. I also hope that I'm dragging some other people along into my vortex, you know, this just vortex of enthusiasm that I have. It's the reason why, you know, I do crazy things to validate, you know, these ideas of mental toughness. And you know, if you can see it and pursue it and you can make it valuable to you, you can find a way to do things that are seemingly impossible, or just, you know, and impossible can just mean impossible for you, or I thought this would be impossible for me and now look at me, I'm doing it. You know, whether that's, sure, you know, going to graduate school or, you know, launching a small business or whatever it happens to be, you know, those meaningful things that scare us. And a lot of the stuff that I do, you know, it manifests in sort of a demonstrative physical way, but that's sort of my chosen metaphor. And it's a meaningful metaphor for me because I was so small and so scrawny and so weak and so not what I am now. I mean, I'm still not a big guy, an average size, and I'm old. I'm 55.
Good grief.
But doing things that based on my early history, I have no business doing.
Sure.
And if I crash and burn, well, that's on me. But I'm not going to not do what I want to do. I'm going to do what I want to do because it brings value to my life. And for whatever reason, there are people out there, you know, it's a fringe bandwidth of humanity. Most of them are kids and, you know, like that sort of thing. I would have loved this sort of stuff back when I was a kid. So I continue to do those things. So, you know, the tough as nails, the, you know, the constant drum beating of, you know, don't look at what I do and think that's interesting. I mean, you know, look at what I do and realize, hey, you can start doing things that you want to do. I didn't start doing any of the feats of strength stuff, Jared, until I was 46.
Oh, wow.
46. And I had no sense that I could do it at the time. I just had a powerful, you know, it was, I was exposed to it, and the people who sort of exposed me to it, introduced me to it, also happened to be very strong Christian men. And all, you know, it was that combination of things that made me want to pursue it. You know, and sure, it gave them a platform. It gave them a way to communicate with people that they wouldn't ordinarily get to communicate with. But when I go into a church or a school and I'm talking to people who I otherwise would have no access to, and, you know, there's going to be someone in that room, maybe a couple someones if I'm really lucky, and it's going to spark. You know, when I get to go into detention centers for juvenile criminals and share how I kind of, you know, went from being literally one of them, you know, and then ultra self-destructive on top of it, to coming out of that, to being whatever all of this represents, having that opportunity, being blessed to be who I am, and to get a chance to share with those types of people, it's been an amazing ride. And, you know, the message, you know, comes back. I mean, yeah, you need to get yourself right with God. You need to find out what that's all about and get that going. But once you do, then you need to not sort of descend into complacency or mediocrity, then you need to be emboldened by that.
Right.
You know, that to me, you know, people will literally ask me, Mike, what's your secret? And they thinking that it's going to be something. Well, you know, I was out on a stormy night and was struck by lightning, and the next thing you know, I could do crazy stuff. You know, and it's the secret, although it's very strong and powerful and big and immense and meaningful to me, may not communicate effectively because it was my faith that led me to become the person I am. It is my family that sort of keeps me accountable, gives me sort of a worldly reminder of what being on the right path is, and how I don't want to, you know, do anything to compromise that. You know, my values are reflected in my relationship, you know, with my family. That's what gives me my superpower. I mean, I was kind of crazy when I first joined the Army. You know, I was really kind of swimming in all of that awesomeness. But when I found out that my wife was expecting, instead of that sort of, oh, now I'm going to settle down and think about the future and become responsible and boring, it was the opposite. I actually amped up from there, like, hard. And that was when, you know, kind of the Mike Gillette that a lot of people had a hard time being around when I was in the Army sort of was unleashed, because I became super just, you know, maniacal about training, just everything. Okay. And other than that period where I was smashed up and, you know, feeling lost, once I kind of got myself back to whatever this is, it's been like that. And I'm so thankful for that. I can't imagine not living this way. And I hope to shine whatever the spotlight for me was shown on things of you know, value and in my own particular way, because the things that I do don't really relate to a lot of people, regular people, sure, sensible people, sure, however you choose to describe them, people who other people don't roll their eyes about. But I'm okay with that. But the, I still think the example is important. The light that I can shine on a potential way to live, particularly for men, particularly now, when you know, masculinity is not a thing that's celebrated in our institutions of higher learning. It's toxic. It's something to be overthrown. It's been marginalized and oppressing, you know, everyone else, and it's just inherently bad. No, that's silly. You know, strong men are a most important resource. We need more of them. We just, in the same way that we need strong women, we need strong kids.
Amen. Yeah.
Strength, you know, I can manifest it visibly in a particular way. A lot of the ways that I hope I'm manifesting it, you can't really see unless you kind of, you know, peel back the curtain, and then you're looking at my wife, and you know, we've been married, we're coming up on 35 years in December, the relationships that we have with our kids and how they're living their lives and how they're pursuing Jesus and trying to live out their faith. That's when you kind of see, you know, the full spectrum of what it is to live the way that I do, to live the way that you do. But it's the obvious dramatic stuff that I think kind of initially gets people's attention. And that's okay, too. If it prompts somebody to sort of stick, read a couple things, and then start digging a little bit to find out what is it that makes this guy go, you know, they'll find that out.
Hey, Mike, what's the, for guys listening who may not be familiar with what you do, what's the best way to get in touch with you? What do you recommend?
Best way to get in touch with me would be to go to MikeGillette.com, MikeGillette.com, and get on my email list, and I will start beating you with positivity in a benevolent kind of, like, now if you're a younger guy, it'll be like, you know, a crazy uncle. If you're an older guy, I'm like your crazy older brother. But I'm gonna bang on you hard with this stuff in a good way, and that's also gonna provide immediate access to a lot of things that I've written, my social media channels, like my YouTube channel. There's a ton of content there, excerpts of speeches I've given, videos I've created for Black Belt Magazine or the Title Boxing Company that, surprise, surprise, talk about things like mental toughness. So.
Sure.
Once you go down the Mike Gillette road, you're going to just get it from all sides.
Well, Mike, I can't thank you enough, man, for taking time to be on here. And again, I just want to thank you for being on this podcast.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
Once again, men, thank you for listening to the Pursuit of Manliness podcast. I want to say again, thanks to Mike Gillette for being on. If you want to get in touch with him, it's MikeGillette.com. If you want to get in touch with us, you can check out our website, thepursuitofmanliness.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube now. So it's all The Pursuit of Manliness. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Pursue Manliness. We also have this closed Facebook group right now for men who it's growing every day. It's 570 some guys at the time of recording this. It's really cool to see what's happening there. I would encourage you to check that out. There's some content in there, some things in there that we don't offer on the other pages. Again, that's Facebook groups / Pursue Manliness. And if you had any questions, comments, whatever, you can email me at it's pursuemanliness@gmail.com. And if you want to listen to this, you can find the podcast on iTunes, which we'd love for you to leave a review if you would. And we're also on YouTube with the podcast. So, guys, thanks for listening and keep pursuing manliness. Joe.